Blog Talk Radio.
I think at one time or another we've all questioned as to whether all that we see and are experiencing in our world has some sort of a rational plan behind it, because we understand now that both the Republican and the Democratic Party in our country are basically run by the same people. The same money finances both sides. We now know, of course, through the work of many historians who have spent their life working on research to show us that both sides of world conflicts have always been financed by the same people. And as I've said before, there seems to be a method to the madness going on in the world. We know, of course, that we cannot depend on our leaders. Our leaders are misleaders. There is a science that they're following. They have their own agenda, and it doesn't include you. What your government pays for, it gets. If you are paid to do something for the government, they will extract from you exactly what they have paid for. When we understand that, then we look at universities and schools, government-financed institutions of education, and see the kind of students and the kind of education that's being turned out by these government-financed schools. Logic will tell you that if what is being turned out in those schools was not in accord with what the state and the federal government wanted, then it would change it. The bottom line is that the government is getting what they have ordered. They're getting what they have paid for. They do not want your children to be educated. They do not want you to think too much. That is why our country and our world has become so proliferated with entertainments, mass media, game shows, television shows, amusement parks, drugs, alcohol, and every kind of entertainment to keep the human mind entertained, so that you don't get in the way of important people by doing too much thinking. You had better wake up and understand that there are people who are guiding your life and you don't even know it. And all American citizens, I think, have suspected something like this is going on. But we're all too busy trying to stay alive and live our lives. And after all, what can one person do about it? This is the most powerful government the world has ever known. They had the ability to get a hold on Adolf Hitler 50 years ago. He had a standing army, the greatest navy, air force, military, secret underworld organizations operating throughout the world. But this government got a hold on Adolf Hitler because it chose to and it wanted to. And if you do not pay your income taxes, they will find you if you go to the Amazon jungle, and they will make an example of you. They will find you and they will deal with you, and you know it. But for some reason, they're unable to get a handle on drugs and the crime in the streets for some reason.
Well, I have a number of people from whom I get policy. I'm talking to Frank Gaffney. I talked to Richard Haass.
And Richard Haass served under Colin Powell during this Bush administration over at the State Department. He's now the president of the Council on Foreign Relations.
much the idea of a one world community, a new world order. You know, they see that as...
They see themselves as a government as opposed to a group of world leaders or people with influence at a global level who are talking about global issues, do they?
They see themselves as headhunters. They'll get an up-and-coming politician who they think may be president or prime minister one day, and as globalist, industrialist leaders who believe that politics shouldn't be in the hands of the politicians.
People talk to me about, you know, the issue of Republican versus Democrat as if they don't get it. And I say, look, here's the way you get it. It's organized crime. All you do is you call the Republicans the Genoveses and you call the Democrats the Gambinos. The people at the top, they treat it like a crap game, like it's their crap game, like they're making lots of money. Occasionally, somebody at the table shoots each other, but the moment anything threatens their crap game, they all unite to protect it. They're both controlled by the same financial, economic, and corporate interests.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order.
It used to be more secretive. You know, the New World Order was talked about 30 or 40 years ago, and nobody would say it out and open. Now they talk about the New World Order. Or they just think the world would be better off if we had one world government.
Right.
I don't. I mean, I don't even like the size of our federal government, let alone one world government. No.
It's a need for a new world order.
Within the next 4 years, we will see the emergence of a new international
order. The beginning. Of a new international order.
But there's a very, very clear-cut and easily identifiable system in place that puts all of these elements from media control to government control to energy control together into one apparatus working together effectively towards its final goal, which is, you know, global control.
A new world is emerging. It is a new world order.
It's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order.
There is a chance for the President of the United States to use this disaster to carry out what his father, a phrase his father used, and that is a new world order.
They're inside a cabal, a conspiracy, if you will, to take control of the United States, lead us into a one world government run by them.
Americans have been taught to expect their salvation from government, instead of recognizing government as the most dangerous threat they'll face in their lives.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
It is a big idea. A new world order.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
Either you were with us, or you were with the terrorists.
I also believe that a lot of gun owners would agree that AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the hands of criminals.
Okay, everybody, Joseph Gibson here, Bobby Podcasting. I'll be back in about 2 minutes, and then I'll be 100% live. I just got to connect to a few other social media platforms that I broadcast on, and then we'll be live in about 2 minutes and 25 seconds, okay? Thank you for those that are listening tonight.
John. Here, you ruined this. Sure you wrote it big enough?
Mm, yes, old King George should be able to see that.
Mm-hmm.
When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, a decent respect requires that they declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to establish new government. We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, do and with the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved of all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. In the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
All right, here we go, George Washington there. That was a good one. That was from that documentary there, John Adams there, that was on HBO. That was a clip from that, if anybody doesn't recognize it. But most people don't. They have selected memory, and they can't remember most of the things that they're told or they see. That's why it's repetition, kind of like going to the gym, you know. That's why you go to the gym, you repetition. How do you build your muscles? Repetition. You know, you go one time, what good is it? Get sore, and then you go right back to the way you were. But muscles have memory, and that's why, just like your brain, in a way, it has memory, and then, you know, repetition. You keep saying things to people, oh, yeah, and then they remember. Because it amazes me about history, how people cannot remember history. You know, and it's like with this Israel conflict. How many people come with the asinine comment that Palestine, there was no such thing as Israel before 1948. You know, and it was Palestine before then. No. No, Israel was there first, trust me. But whoever was there first doesn't matter. Throughout the world, peoples have conquered other nations, and just like here in America, we came over here, we claimed the land, conquered, fought for it, and it's our land now. That's it. We're not giving it back. Nobody's going to give anything back. This is the way it is. This is the way the world works. If everyone was to give everything back, then no way, then we didn't find another planet to live on, because nobody would have a land. You know, just use common sense. And right now, just real quick, just touch on what's going on in Israel. People don't understand. This is the focal point of the world right now, and we are headed towards World War III, or the end. Simple as that. I don't know what you believe. Everyone has their own beliefs out there. That's fine. And anybody who calls in tonight, please watch your language. I got so many complaints about that. I mean, I understand sometimes people slip up and they say things out of passion or slip up with their words. That's fine. You know, I get that. But when every other word out of your mouth is the F word, you got a problem. Do you walk into a courthouse and talk like that when you're standing in front of the judge? Do you a real estate transaction? Do you go to work talking like that? I mean, so don't come to the show talking like that. I mean, if you're not intelligent enough to speak clearly and refrain from vulgar language, then just don't call in. Go someplace else. I don't mind. I don't mind. Trust me. That's why I didn't really advertise this show. I invite a few people to listen, and everyone else, if they want to listen to, they can listen to the archive. Because when I advertise the show, I get 30, 40 callers, and everybody wants to speak, and everybody's yelling at each other, and nothing gets accomplished. You know, just like with this guy, Shabaki, calls in last show, and he hijacks the show. He starts talking completely asinine out of his mouth about history. And he wants $750 trillion in reparations. This is what this is really going on, too, out in California, this reparation stuff. Israel. You see what's going on right now? Iran has launched a major attack with their drones. I think 150, 200 drones. I was going to contact one of my people that I know in the military. I was going to ask him what was going on. But I don't like doing that only, you know, once in a while because, you know, they can get in trouble. I mean, we've had people call in here from Fort Hood a couple times over years and tell us what's going on. I had a couple people call in from overseas when the thing was going on in Afghanistan. And, you know, they take a chance doing that. But I know these people personally, and that's what we're going to get to in my story also here. I'm going to talk a little bit about my past here and where I'm at today and why I'm at where I'm at today. Try to get into that a little bit because some people did ask me, and some people want to know because, you know, especially some people in my community because I ran for public office here. And a lot of people don't know, and you can't believe what you read in the newspapers or you can't believe what you see on TV because it's all fake. It is fake, 100% fake. I assure you of that. There is really no foundation or truth to a lot of the things they say. You have to really be careful what you see and what you hear out there because we live in a world today in land of deception. And people have gains, and they're trying to make a gain, and they're trying to use these stories or this information for their personal gain or their company's gain or an agenda that they're trying to push upon you. And you have to understand this, you know, and it's sad. It really is, but it's confusing and it's stressful. But if you're not awake and you don't understand really what's happening, what's going on out there, you could be duped real easy and create a lot of enemies amongst yourself of good people that are really trying out there, really are out there trying to help and do the right thing. And another reason why I don't, like I said, advertise really much the show anymore where I put it on the day. We would get the chat rooms. I got two separate chat rooms going sometimes. And especially the one on Blog Talk, you get these people that are just filthy, rotten people that just come on there with their fake handle names. And I can't have no way to block them either. You know, I can kick them out of the chat room, but then they come right back and they'll use a troll name or something. So why waste the energy or time? Just ignore them if they get in there and they start with the nonsense. Because it does happen, you know, if anyone's in the chat room. And then there's people that call in, and they'll call in, and you'll think they're a really good caller, and then they'll just want to throw a dig out there. So, you know, this way, and the misinformation, too. But anyway, again, real back to Israel, the Iran and Israel thing right now. This could lead us into World War III. People don't understand this. This is very, very close to World War III or the end, because again, the nuclear capabilities that Iran does have, the reactors, nuclear reactors that they have in Iran and the military equipment. See, Russia is tied in a lot with Iran. And if we attack or someone attacks and threatens Russia, like the same thing in Syria, Russia will come involved. And they have remember now, Israel discovered a large depository of natural gas off the Gaza Strip there, off in the ocean there. Enough natural gas to supply the world with. And we know that Russia supplies natural gas to all of Europe. So if Israel taps into that and then makes a deal with Europe, that threatens Russia's very existence. Okay? That's one thing right there. Covered that about 2 years ago. All right? So that's another thing that you don't hear about, that's not talked about. And look it up. I'm telling you the truth. You can look it up. So anyway, the book of Ezekiel describes the events where the Red Army comes down from the north. Moscow, I think it's Moscow is the name. And Turkey will get involved somehow also. Iran, Persia is involved. And this army comes down from the north and attacks Israel. And boom, in one shot, God wipes them all out. How? I don't know. A miracle happens. I don't have my Bible in front of me. I wish I did. I'd read you the verses. What's going to happen is the Antichrist will take credit for stopping this Red Army and getting peace declared in that region for the begin the 7-year tribulation. So you'll have peace for 3.5 years. This is all written, foretold, and supposedly the rapture. We get into a lot of debates and discussions about that, when the rapture is going to happen. It's going to happen before this Antichrist comes on the scene, or is it after, or is it halfway through the tribulation, or is it towards the last half hour of the tribulation, like the Bible does say? What's the last half hour? You know, so I've gotten into a lot of, remember we had years ago, we had Pastor Anderson, a controversial pastor, who he did that movie After the Tribulation. It was very popular at one time, where he says that we'll be here for most of the tribulation, but not until the end, the last half hour, then we'll be taken out. Other pastors have come on here. Remember, we had Dr. Peter Ventura on here many, many, many times over the years, where he's come on and he's actually preached, and he disagrees with that. He says we'll be raptured out of here before that happens. But anyway, again, the Red Army comes down from the north. God intervenes, stops it. And then the Antichrist takes credit for it, and then everybody, ooh and ah, ooh, this guy was able to get peace declared. And of course, we already know people, you know, they're easy to get deceived. You know, what happens during that 3.5 years, peace is declared, and we all start worshiping the Antichrist, you know, or he demands his worship halfway through. He breaks the peace treaty with Israel, and then we already know, if you just go read the book of Revelations, and I'm not trying to give a theological lesson here tonight, but that's basically where we're at right now in the timeline in biblical events. And the Red Army's getting ready to come down and attack Israel. So when that happens, we're either going to be raptured out of here or we're not, and then we're going to know. Things are going to start happening very quickly. We know time is speed. Look how fast time is going. Last week was just boom. No, look how fast time is going. Last month, it was just Easter, I thought, right? Remember, we were all talking about Easter. Christmas, look how fast time is going. So we know in the end, time speeds up. The weather, look at the earthquakes we've been having lately. The tornadoes, every year, tornadoes get worse and worse and worse. Bible says that. So, you know, well, men wrote that book. What do they know? They're making this stuff happen, right? That's what people say. You know, so I've heard those arguments many times over the years. We've done a lot of shows where we've had theological shows, and we debated the Urantia theory. I remember that one where we had experts come on with the Urantia. We've had Catholics on here. We've had Muslims come on here. We even had Black Jesus Minister come on here. Remember that one? Oh, Lord. The people, where they come off, where they get these beliefs. But anyway, somebody just sent me a message about Chewbacca and reparations. Yeah, last week he was on here. And they're actually, this is a big thing out in California now. They want reparations. And their T's talking $700 trillion of reparations. That's what the Black Panther Party is demanding. Black Panther. Unbelievable. I've had them on here too. But anyway, they have this Black Caucus out there in California that's done this independent studies and whatnot, and they've come out with the numbers that everyone should have to pay, America should have to pay African-Americans for reparations for something that they did not suffer themselves directly, but because their ancestors suffered. So I say this is why shouldn't I have ancestors probably throughout my lineage of my background that have suffered. Everybody has suffered some sort of race or discrimination throughout their life, or slavery throughout the history of mankind. So why not everybody? Everybody goes, everybody get reparations then, right? Why should it be just the blacks? You know? So there you go. There's a controversial topic right there. And right now I'll probably be labeled a racist for saying all these things, which is okay. I mean, you could tack that onto the Nazi and the snitch and a police officer, FBI agent, I'm an informant, everything else. You know, tack that all onto the labels that you want to give me. I don't care. So everyone knows that I ran for public office here in North Carolina the past couple times here for House District 65. And this time around, we had a big problem where they brought up my past. And now that's become the focal point and the real topic that they wanted to talk about at the Board of Elections hearing, which I really didn't get a chance to present myself the way I wanted to, even though I won. I did win. I didn't present myself the way I really wanted to because they wanted to really know about my past. I think that's what they were really digging at, is to know who I was, because they asked, because it was really the subject of everything, and my record, my so-called criminal record that they Lexis computer program that they developed that took all the my associates and everybody that I know and I've associated with, even my next-door neighbors I never even met. That was in the background report. And their records were now my records. Yeah, that's, I'm dead serious. It was 49-page report. It was absolutely ridiculous. So they have convictions on my record now that date to 1987. I was 13 years old. So I don't know how they got that. So it's completely ridiculous. And then if you read the media stories, I mean, I've read a bunch of them, completely way out there. They don't know what they said. I was convicted of first degree robbery. Never have I ever been convicted of first degree robbery. I assure you of that. It's not true. Never, ever, ever, ever did that happen. Okay. I never robbed anybody in my life. So that's a lie. That's slander. And I also have a slander case. I mean, a lawsuit that's been in the process of being filed now in Rockingham County. And I've got an injunction, temporary restraining order, too, that I have being processed right now. It's very difficult to get anything filed down there because they don't like me, and they give me a hard time every single time I go down there. And we'll get into that also hopefully here a little bit tonight. And you'll see why things are that. Now, everything I tell you, everything that I say, or anything that I say about myself or my past, I can back up with concrete evidence, okay? Documentation, newspaper articles from years and years ago that could reflect the stories of what had happened. I have court transcripts that are copyrighted that I have in my possession. As a matter of fact, they were in the book. Anything. I have text from recently, from when I was working undercover with the DEA. I have text messages that can... It really, basically, that's a movie in itself. It's a story of everything that happened like 3 years ago. Every single text message from the time I met, I went up to the office and got hired by them, from the time that, and right up to the end. Every single text message, every single case I worked on, even text messages with the drug dealers, I have all that. You know, and I wish there was a way I could get them printed out. I've been trying, and nobody seems to know how to do that. I'd like to get them all printed out, because it's really like a book within itself. And the communications that I had with the DEA, and then how I went and worked for the Rockingham County Sheriff's Department there for a little while on a few jobs, and then I went to the Guilford County Sheriff's Department, worked with them, Eden Police Department, Reedsville Police Department. They tried to get me to go out to Winston-Salem and High Point, and I met with the DEA in Kernersville, and that didn't work out. It was too far of a freaking drive to be traveling out there and doing that, because there's a lot of, when you're doing stuff like that and you're doing undercover work and you're trying to, you know, I was posing as a drug dealer. That's what I was. I was a drug dealer. I mean, how else are you going to buy that amount of drugs and somebody not be suspicious? So I'm posing as a drug dealer, you know, and meanwhile, at the same time, I'm going to court for custody of my two children. Now imagine how that looks. Now, it's not something you cannot talk about this stuff when it's happening. You sign disclosure agreements. And remember, it's supposed to be secret, confidential. Besides, you could put your life in danger and other people around you when you do that. So you can't talk about that. So my hands are tied. So what do I do? I'm not allowed to tell the truth. What do you do? I'm in court testifying, you know, trying to get custody of my children. I'm in a battle here, and that was the main reason why my other half left anyway, because here I am, I'm going out at 2 o'clock in the morning to go make a drug buy. Where are you going? How do you come up with a story for that? Or why am I coming home late? So, you know, so all this is happening. So I'm just giving you an outline of why things were happening. And then years and years ago, I have a history of this anyway, but... Basically, I think that's where I'm going to start here, try to start with some of the things that, how I ended up where I'm at today. I don't think I'll be able to go into all of it and go word for word, detail for detail. I'll try to do the best I can. You have to remember, this is a 33-year project here, thing that has happened to me. But where I'm at today and the problems I'm having today, is it's a powder keg that could blow up, because I have a corrupt county that I live in. And there's people that are corrupt, and there's also information that they don't want released. And it's also that I also have the GOP here that don't like me certain people in the GOP. Why, I don't know. I've yet to figure that out, why they came out and attacked me like this, because back in 2022, this woman, Diane Parnell, her and I conversed with each other through emails, and I told her a lot of the things that I'm telling you here. I didn't go into the depths about it, and it's all in email, and I showed this to the Board of Elections. They kind of like disregarded it. And I told her a little bit about my past, and she wrote back to me, well, the other side can use that against you. And I said, well, don't worry about it. That's be my problem then to deal with. I didn't know my side was going to use it against me, you know, and that's what they did. So she kind of backstabbed me. And the real reason why they didn't want me, hang on, let me plug this in here. The real reason that they did come out for me is I was approached, I was told about this casino thing that was going on. And, you know, they had this project outlined. And I live in this area, actually, where this casino was going to be built. And they were surveying the land. This idea came about a few years ago. And they had all this lined up to get the right players involved and the right people in office to get this deal moving. So, and there's a lot of money invested in this casino. Anytime you have a big project like that and you have outside influence coming in, outside money coming in, you know, and there's a threat to that being shut down or being exposed or brought to light, they want to shut that person up, okay? So that's the main reason why they didn't want me running, because they got their puppet boy in there, Reese Pirtle, who's their yes man, who's the former police chief of Eden, who does whatever they say. You know, he goes where they tell him to go. He goes where they tell him to go, and he does what they want, and he votes along the lines of the way they tell him to vote. And that's how it works. It's a good old boys club. And if you go against that norm if you go against the grain and you try to stand out and do things on your own, or you try to do what's right and that you feel is right for what the people want, then you will most likely not be allowed to be in their big club, okay? And we all know that, because politics is a dirty game, right? And it doesn't have to be that way. And I stood for trying to change that. I want to restore our republic, lawful form of government. Okay? I don't want the good old boys club. I don't want this. The government is, we're a country of laws and rules. And when someone bends the rules or breaks the law, and they allow that to slip through the cracks, and they allow that to move forward, the machine will break down. And then it's like a snowball effect. The problem becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's what we've got today with our system. It's broken because we have not done what we're supposed to do, which was obey the Constitution. What did he say? What was it, Jefferson that came out? They said, what did you give? What have you given us? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. You know, and we've lost our republic. That's what the main reason why the Civil War was fought, because of the Northern aggression and the states' rights. That's what the Civil War was fought over, not slavery. Okay? So, no matter what you've been taught or the history that your history teacher taught you in school, not true. I'm not going to get into a lesson about that, but if you go to republicoftheunitedstates.org, a lot of people came together about 15 years ago, and they tried to start this movement called the Restore America Plan. You know, I've talked about that over the years. And they were in talks with the military, a lot of senators, and tried to restore de jure form of government. And we've done several, many, many shows about that, where I've had Governor Carpenter on here and so many other people, representatives from the Republican. The Obama administration basically took out their secret military and trashed that organization. But they were pretty strong, and they were trying to restore, do the right thing and restore the republic, our lawful form of government. And because right now we have a de facto corporation that runs everything. So you're not going to fix anything unless we go back to, you know, obeying the law, the Constitution. But anyway, back to my situation here. Back when I was, 17 years old, you know how they got those recruiters that come to your high school and everything, and, you know, they try to get kids going to the military. And, I met one of them. That was my original goal and intentions and plan, was to go into the Navy. And so I started hanging around with a lot of people that were in the military. And, you know, as a matter of fact, some of my best friends were Navy SEALs. I was not a Navy SEAL, so don't go starting that rumor around now. I'm saying my friends were, and I was hanging around with them. And, you know, they were, this is back near where Desert Storm was, you know, the Gulf War was going on. And we went out one night and to a bar. And back then, you know, it wasn't as strict as it was today. So, you know, you could sneak into a bar and get, you know, especially up north in Connecticut, and sit there. And plus, I looked like I was, you know, 21. You know, you could just sit there and drink. And plus, I was with a bunch of, you know, military guys. And, you know, we're nobody's going to give us any problems. So we're bar hopping. And we go into New Haven, Connecticut. We're on Ferry Street. We walk into Sullivan's Bar. It's closed down now. Probably mainly because of us, because we destroyed it. But anyway, I got into a huge bar brawl with these guys. And some people got really hurt bad, and I ended up getting arrested and in trouble for that. And at the same time when I did this, I was fencing stolen computers for a buddy of mine out of New York. You know, I was in high school. I was trying to make some extra money. My parents were divorced. I was basically, you know, didn't really have a place to live, so I was on my own. I was trying to hustle and make money. It was very hard. We were in a bad recession at that time. If anybody remembers, 1991, 1990, times were not, you know, if you're a kid in high school and you're trying to get ahead, you know, I made some bad decisions. So I was fencing stolen computers. I was not robbing anybody. I was not stealing anything. I just simply was selling them for somebody. And yes, I did know they were stolen. I did know. The guy told me, he says, you know, these are hot. You know, be careful. He said they came from businesses in such and such areas. I didn't know exactly where from. But, you know, hey, that's just the way what I did, and that's the decision I made. I was 17, 18 years old at the time. Well, these computers apparently were linked up with the guy that I was selling them for was linked up with the Colombo crime family in New York City. And anybody knows the mafia back then had a very, very strong stronghold on New York at that time, the New York Manhattan area. John Gotti, if you remember, he was getting arrested at that time. A lot was going on with that. And the feds were watching them and watching all the five families out there. And so anyway, make a long story short, I get arrested for this assault. Now the cops all of a sudden they're watching me. Well, I get pulled over one night with a bunch of computers in the back of my truck. They run the serial numbers on them. Now, these computers are not like back then. Computers are not like today. These tiny little laptops we got. Computers were big. They were heavy. You know, they were monsters. I mean, a laser printer back then would go for, you know, a color laser printer can go for $8,000 back then. That was, and it was big, huge. So, you know, sometimes it takes two guys to load these things up. So I was making a delivery. And I got pulled over by a Wallingford detective. And I guess they were watching me. And so they brought me in for questioning. And they wanted to know where I got the computers. And, of course, I didn't tell them. I'm not going to snitch on the mafia. You've got to be crazy. You know, I'm not going to do it. No way. You know, I wouldn't be here today. So they let me go after the questioning. And they even let me take the computers. I guess to watch me where I sold them or whatnot. I don't know. But then about a week later, they pulled me over again. I moved the computers to my basement of my home in Meriden, Connecticut, where I was staying. Remember, I told you my parents were divorced. My father bought a house in Meriden, Connecticut, and I was able to stay there, you know, sometimes over the weekends and whatnot. But so I would snuck them into the basement of my dad's house and store them in there. Back, you know, up north, everybody has a basement. Not like down here in North Carolina, nobody has a basement. And houses are built differently than they are built here in North Carolina. So anyway, the police know they're in my basement. They're watching me. They pull me over again. Make a long story short, they arrest me for possession of stolen property. And they want to know where the computers are. Because they broke down the information to all of them, all the, you know, serial numbers and whatnot. And when they pull me over in Wallingford, Connecticut, they, you know, I'm driving a 1987 Toyota four-wheel drive pickup truck. You know, that was the style back then, all souped up. You know, and I was making good money selling computers off the side. Remember now, I had this pending charge for the assault and for the bar fight. And these guys were Navy SEALs, like I told you. So now the police are trying to build a case, and they're tying it together. They're thinking that I'm selling stuff for the military, okay? and they think I'm selling information. And their heads get bloated. They blow up with ideas that are not true. So after I get hauled, they kidnap me and want me for the police. They grab me. They bring me down Towers Mill Road, which is a long, dark road, wooded road. And they pull me out of the car and they say, "You're going to admit to these computers. You're going to tell us everything we want to know." Poof, you know, punching me and everything, roughing me up. And remember, I'm a kid. So, you know, I push back. And, you know, after about 10, 15 minutes, they finally know they're not going to get any information. Well, they said, "Just bring them in. And then they made a racial slur. These were three white guys. But they said, "We'll let the niggers get them down there at the county jail." That's what they said to me. You know what they're going to do to you, a kid like you down there, you know what they're going to do to you, you know, trying to scare you, you know, and I'm just keeping my mouth shut. So now I get to the police station, and I call my father. I tell my father, because there's computers in the basement, there's stolen stuff, and the police, I know, are going to be going there. And I said, "Dad, look, I got a confession to make. I put some stolen computers inside the basement. You need to get rid of them, because the police are coming there to search the house." And he goes, "What the hell's wrong with you? Why'd you put, you know?" And they're listening on the other end, you know, which is illegal. They're not supposed to do, but they were. They hurry me back up in a lockup. They go and they raid my house. They catch my dad with the computer. So they arrest him too. So now my dad's arrested. Now what am I going to do? I feel, you know, like I said, my parents were going through a divorce at that time. Now my dad's in trouble. Oh boy, I mean, my life is pretty much spinning out of control. What am I going to do? So I admit to the computers. I say it was all mine. I broke into the places and stole them. I say that because I can't snitch on the mafia, you know, and I can't let my dad go to jail. What am I going to do? I got to admit to whatever they want me to admit to and sign a statement on myself and take the rap. I got to do the time. I got to do whatever it takes. You know, I mean, what would you do? You're not going to let your father go to jail. Anybody who would, well, nowadays people would. Who knows? You know, who knows? I mean, the way kids are, there's no loyalty today. Well, so the cops now, what they want to do is they want to empty the books. I've done every crime under the sun in that town for the last 5 years. I mean, everything. They got me. They said, "What about this one? Okay, pin this one on them. Everything. And I'm just initialing my name, you know, because I'm like, I got to get out of here. And they promised they were going to let me out, too, on a promise to appear, you know, and as soon as I got arraigned. So I'm signing statements on myself. They let my dad go, like they promised, and I signed a statement on myself. So basically I'm slam dunk as a conviction. I signed a statement. So now I'm looking at jail time, you know, and I'm a kid. I forget about the military now. And remember I told you they had this idea that I was working, you know, selling stuff to the military, and they were, you know, selling to these guys who were Navy SEALs. They ended up getting disbanded, actually, that SEAL team, three of the guys, actually. One of them was an Army Ranger. I can't remember. It's so long ago, you know, and I don't even talk to these guys anymore. I mean, we stayed in contact for a couple of years after that, but with everything that happened, we kind of, like, just, you know, they were appreciative that I didn't, you know, I basically took the heat for a lot of stuff, and even the bar fight, I didn't testify against them or anything like that. So, you know, we stayed friends for a couple of years. But, you know, well, how many people are still friends with people they knew 33 years ago? You know, so, but anyway, you know, I'm looking at, well, serious jail time, and I'm getting screwed over. You know, the system is kind of like gonna hand it to me. I mean, granted, I'm 18 years old now, and I'm looking at, you know, 20 years in jail. Well, more than that, actually, with all the charges they had me admit to. And they're trying to scare me. And now the FBI and the ATF and the DEA and everybody wants to interview me. And they sit me down and they want to know more about the stolen computers again. They want to know about it. I said, "Look, we can cut you a deal. You know, work with us." I said, "Nope, nope, 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 nope. I'll take my chances in court." So my lawyers comes up with some bright idea that we'll plead guilty to everything and we'll file a sentence review. Now, you don't ever file a sentence review when you make a deal in court, because if you file a sentence review, the deal that you got for lesser time will always be increased. It's not the same as a sentence modification. It's different. It's totally different. And the sentence reviews are for people who get, like, life or the death penalty. That's what a sentence review is for. Well, this idiot lawyer that I had that I paid $5,000 to, you know, basically sold me out down the river. I ended up choking him in the courtroom that day when I got sentenced, when I got screwed over. But that's a whole other story. But anyway, I filed for the sentence review. I plead guilty to the charges. Now I'm sitting there inside in the county jail, getting ready to get shipped off to the prison. I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? So I get approached again by the state police and gang intelligence officers and whatnot. And during this time in Connecticut, the gangs ran a lot of the prisons and the streets. I mean, New Haven, Connecticut was infested with Latin Kings, 20 Love, Los Cerritos in Hartford, Connecticut, and a lot. And they even had their reaches and their clutches into the judicial system. As far as they had a prosecutor that was a gang member, they found out later on in Hartford, Connecticut. So this is how bad things are. And the shootings, I mean, if you go back and you do news reports from 92, 93, 94 in Connecticut, you'll see nothing about, you'll see everything about Latin Kings and Los Cerritos, the gang war that was going on up there. So apparently some of the information on the computers that I had on the disk drives, remember they had floppy disks back then, they didn't have hard drives like we had to have today. Remember, computers are a different world than a computer world. It's so odd and strange when you think back and you look at all the, you know, how things have changed technology over the years. I mean, it's just incredible. You know, the speed and the way our computers, I mean, it's just even a monitor, how you look at a computer monitor today compared to today. I mean, the way it was like, it's just, you remember those computer monitors? Like, it was like a, you know, the big glass monitors, it's just incredible. You know, flat screen TVs didn't exist back then, you know, like today. You remember the plasma TVs they had? Remember the big ones? I mean, if you had one of those, you were like in, you were like popular, but, you know. So, remember now, so the information I had was on floppy disk, and apparently there was information on there. There was some gang information and whatnot. That's what I come to find out today later on as years have gone by. So they approached me, and they want me to work undercover, and they want to give me a job, and they said they'll reduce my sentence and let me go free. And if I help them out with some information and infiltrate a gang for them. So that's basically how this all started with me working for the feds and working undercover. My life began with that. So what they did was is they basically schooled me, taught me what to do, showed me, you know, how to do things. Basically, you know, I went to training, went to school, you know, on how to do certain things. And talk, you know, it's hard for me to go into and give in detail about that. But anyway, so now they place me inside the prison, and I'm an inmate in there. And so I basically infiltrate the gang. This is what happens. I infiltrate the gang. I actually become president of the gang throughout my period of time. And I work undercover. And this is all documented in a book, most of it. How it's told, and there's federal court transcripts in there, incident reports about the assaults and what happened to me, how they left me in there for dead, and, you know, I just don't know how else to say it. All the information is there, but I'm telling you right now, so to back up what I'm saying, if it sounds bizarre or crazy. But anyway, they transfer me from prison to prison, and I helped stop murder attempts, gave them the hierarchy of the gang, avoid drugs, numerous drugs, weapons, help uncover stuff like that, and none of them, you know, told them about the corruption within the probation department, the parole department. They hated me, the probation, the parole department up there, because a lot of them, a couple of those guys, I think, ended up getting fired and charged because of that, because they were gang members. Imagine having a parole officer that's a gang member. What the hell kind of crap is that? You know, so what happens is, and they were supposed to let me go, and they kept telling them, I said, listen, I've done what I'm supposed to do. You guys got to let me go. I want to go home. I want this to stop. It's over. You know, I've done how much more do you want out of me? And, you know, and it seemed like they just would not stop this. Like, one more case, you know, and I don't want it. And I'm sitting inside Osborne Prison on my bunk. I mean, it was in a single cell, and this kid comes knocking on the door. This kid, he's a Latin King. And he says, Joe, he says, you know, we got information that, you know, you're an undercover guy working in here, and, you know, infiltrated us. And, well, you know, basically my identity has been revealed. And I said, it's not true, you know, yada, 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 yada. So Immediately, I tried to get to a prison phone, and I had a secret PIN number and a number that I called that would get me in touch with somebody in case of an emergency. Or I had, you know, points of contact in every jail in case I was in trouble. You know, I could go to that person and say, hey, I'm in trouble, get me out of here. Hey, you know, I'm in danger. Or, hey, this is going down, stuff like that. So I called my intelligence guy. I said, we need to meet. We got a problem. So I meet with the gang intelligence officer the next day. We used to meet in the back of a medical office. They'd say, but Gibson, inmate such and such, you got to go to medical to get checked out. You know, that's what they, you know, go see the doctor today or go see the dentist today or the counselor wants to see you, something like that. To make, you know, because I had a job working inside the prison kitchen at that particular facility. So I meet with the gang intelligence officer. His name is Diefendorfer. Diefendorfer. What kind of name is that? It's a weird name. And Lieutenant King. And I tell him, I said, look, man, I said, they got me pegged. They found out I'm in here. I'm not supposed to be in here. I'm undercover. I said, you guys got to get me out of here. I said, I'm in trouble. I said, there's a contract put out on me. He said, well, you're the president of the Latin Kings right now. He said, how can they put a contract on you? I said, listen, the Terminators, which is a faction of the Latin Kings, that's how they did it. They got a way of doing it. He goes, well, who are the guys going to carry out the hit? I said, well, there's four Terminators in this prison right now. And I gave him the names of the guys. And I said, if you can get them out of here, I don't know how. I said, I don't know. You know, eventually word is going to get back that I just want to go home. I said, yeah, I've done what I'm supposed to do. Get me home. And they said, Joe, at that time we were working on a staff member that was bringing large quantities of cocaine into the jail. And they were giving me cash money to buy the drugs and, you know, how it works. And they wanted this guy. And we had to get this guy for some reason. They wanted to get this guy. If they got me out of there, but they couldn't get this guy. So they transfer three of the Terminators out and they leave one behind. And the day the hit is, I know the hit's going down. I can feel it. You know, I mean, I got people supposedly watching my back. You know, even inmates that are fellow gang members. Remember now, I'm a gang member now. I'm posing as a gang member. And, well, I know something's going down. They move three of them out. They leave one behind. I go to get on the phone to call my handler and say, hey, what's going on? You got to get this guy out of here or I got to get him, one or the other. And I can't commit a crime like that. I can't assault somebody like that and get away with it, you know, without getting the approval, you know. Because remember, if you look it up, there's certain levels of when you're undercover of what you're allowed to do. There's like a rank one, tier two, tier three, tier four. And tier four, you can commit crimes and get away with it, actually. They let you do that. So if you look it up, go to the U.S. Department of Justice or Attorney General's Office for Confidential Informants. Anyway, I'm getting ready to call my guy, and I lean over to see the phone numbers. Because remember, the phones ain't – we didn't have cell phones back then. You get push phone, and I'm, you know, think, hitting the number. And I'm getting ready – and as soon as I lean over, the guy comes up, and he snuck up from behind me and slashes my throat. That's it, with a surgical blade. That's it. I'm dead, I'm thinking. You know, if I didn't lean over, he would have hit the jugular. Blood squirt shooting 6 feet in the air. Poof! I mean, literally, just shooting out. Boom, boom, boom. That's how gross it was. I put my hand around my neck, go back to my cell, look in the mirror, my neck is wide open. I said, oh, my God, I'm going to die. I'm dead. I'm going to die. And I wrap a T-shirt around my neck and pull it as tight as possible. I just remember the T-shirt turning just saturating in pure red so fast. And I'm like, oh, my God. I mean, I'm starting to get dizzy now. I open up my door. I know who did it. I know who did it. His name was Raymond Figueroa. I said, he called me Figgy. I said, Figgy, you're dead. I'm yelling on the tier of the prison. I said, you're dead, you son of a bitch, and every one of you set me up. You know, and he's running to go get rid of the weapon. He's running down the tier, and he's looking back. I just remember that image. He's looking back at me while he's running because he's got to get rid of the blade and flush it. You know, because he knows, you know, they're going to be coming in. There's going to be a code call, and they're going to be coming in to search the block. And, you know, because I'm going to die soon, you know, down the facility. And I said, you're dead. And now my buddy comes up. He goes, oh, my God, what happened, Joe? You all right? I said, you son of a bitch, why weren't you watching my back, man? You're supposed to be watching my back. And this guard, because he was doing his tour, he comes up. He goes, what the hell happened to you, Gibson? I said, I cut myself shaving. And that's in the reports, actually, that when I made that statement, I cut myself shaving. That's in the book. You know, and he goes, come here. And he grabs me, and he hits a code. All hell breaks loose. They come racing down. I'm in the medical department. They got LifeStar coming in the helicopter. They tell me I'm not going to make it. I'm going to die. I mean, I was fine. I felt fine. Just got a little dizzy real quick. And I remember they were monitoring my blood pressure. So they were real worried about my blood pressure. And they're like, we're losing his blood pressure. And I just felt fine. I didn't think I was going to, you know, I was like, maybe I'm going to think I'm going to make this, you know. And they were worried about stopping the bleeding because they couldn't stop the bleeding. So they can't, the ambulance gets there before the helicopter, believe it or not. So they get me on the ambulance and 16 staples. I'm at the hospital. State police come. Feds come, you know, and they're like, who did this to you? And now they get pissed off at me because they want me to press charges on the guy. And I said, I ain't pressing charges on him. I said, I'll get them on my own. They're like, you can't do that. You can't do that. I said, there's ways of handling things. You know that. But I want revenge on this guy. I mean, this guy tried to kill me. I never got it. I never went back and went after him. But, you know, I guess he lived a miserable life. I don't know whatever happened to him. For all I know, he probably died in a gang war in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Who knows? But I didn't press charges on him. I know they threw him in administrative segregation and a supermax in another state for what he did to me, though. I know that. So 16 staples, boom, they released me. I'm home. I'm back home. And now I got to carry on with my life. What do I do? They kept their word. They released me. I get a phone call from the probation department. They said, you're on probation. And I said, no, I'm not. I'm trying to explain the story here to the to the probation officer that called me. I'm like, listen, I worked undercover. I said, you got the wrong guy. You know, and of course, they're assholes. You know, they everything is, you know, because I'm a maggot convict now, according to him. I never could tell the truth. And I said, listen. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I'm not on probation. My name was cleared. I'm moving on with my life. And they do this. You know, this is, you know, as time go on, I'm out for about a year and a half, and they're contacting me about probation. So, needless to say, I get contacted by this lawyer, John R. Williams, from Haven, Connecticut, because he heard about my situation and the case, you know, and we sue the state of Connecticut and certain people in Connecticut for failing to protect me while I was working inside the prison. And the case finally gets brought to United States Federal District Court. I finally get my day in court, finally get trial after years and years of discovery, interrogatories, and a bunch of all nonsense. And during the first trial, we pull everybody in, state police, FBI, witness after witness. And the jury, for some strange reason, is petrified. They're, after the testimony, after I give my testimony, I tell them how corrupt the system is and all the things that, you know, I was working on and the cases I was working on and the stuff that I found out about drugs in the system, how much power drugs has in the system and influence the drug money that's involved. You got drug money that was tied around LAX airport. I mean, MENA, Arkansas, all around. I mean, it was just it's all connected. Dirty. It's dirty. Everybody's got their hands in it somehow. It's just a dirty, rotten, filthy system. And the juries like can't believe this, you know. And they're petrified and scared, so they beg out of the trial. Judge Edgington, United States Federal Court Judge Edgington, grants a mistrial. Now, this has never happened in the history of the United States, a mistrial on a civil federal lawsuit because the jury was scared for their lives. Never. You think back to all the criminal cases and federal cases. This has never happened. So this gets news media attention. We were trying to keep it quiet. They want to do interviews. They want this. They want that. You know, everything is, you know, I'm getting contact. Now I'm starting to get death threats at home. You know, I'm living with my dad again at this time. And so, needless to say, a second murder attempt happens on my life. I'm getting out of my car, and I get stabbed. The guy comes, three men attack me. The guy puts a gun to my head, gun jams. Another guy in front of me pulls out a knife, stabs me in the chest. Knife goes out my back. He rips the knife out, and I think I'm dead. And I live, obviously. And I crawl back into my car, call 911. I go to Yale Hospital. Say I spend about 2 weeks in the hospital recuperating with chest tubes and everything because, you know, and I get contacted and said, you got to leave the state of Connecticut for your safety. And he said, you can come back for your case when we resume the trial, and that's it, and then you go back. Where can you go? So I relocate down here in North Carolina and open up a landscaping business and, you know, think life's going to be happily ever after. And you know, I'm pretty successful. I've got a good business, got like 60 customers, doing good landscaping, you know, just living a quiet life down here, meet somebody, have children. And I'm talking to a buddy one night back about four years ago, and we're talking about the past, and I'm telling him about, you know, the fentanyl crisis that's going on down here in North Carolina. You know, I said one of my buddies overdosed, you know, this kid I knew. I said, I didn't even know he was on drugs. And when we're talking, and he goes, well, you know, Joe, why don't you, you know, go back and work undercover? You know, he goes, I know somebody, you know, blah, blah, blah. One hand knows this guy, and this guy knows that guy. And I'm thinking to myself, do I really want to do that? He goes, it pays real well. You know, you can make some good money, you know, and I'm thinking, well, if I can make good money and I can clean up the streets here and make things safer, you know, get rid of these nasty drugs for my kids. You know, I got kids. I got two sons. You know, I don't want them to grow up around this, you know, and it's a lot of it in my county here. And I'm thinking, you know, with the things I know and, you know, and I can see that. And the law enforcement down here is so backwards. I mean, how they do things. I mean, it's just, I'm like, I could probably teach them how to do things, you know. So I contacted DEA, and I go up to Stanley Road up in Greensboro. I meet with them and tell them my background. They make some calls, verify who I am, blah, blah, blah. And I go to work for them undercover. So here I am right back in the game again, you know. And 54 undercover drug buys later, I'm, you know, like I said, I'm going through a custody battle at this time. I go to Atwater Street, make an undercover drug buy. And I'm driving home, and remember, I'm running for political office at this time. It's April 2022, and I pull my car over on the side of the road on Route 65 to hang up some signs, vote for Gibson. I get back in my car, light up a cigarette, you know, and I start feeling sick to my stomach. I'm like, man, what the heck? You know, stomach cramps. I'm like, what the heck? You know, and I'm not thinking nothing of it at the time. This lady comes up, knocks on the window of my car. She goes, you okay, sir? You know, and I said, yeah, I just was feeling sick, you know, I just sitting here for a minute, you know, not thinking nothing of it. It's ambulance. She goes, well, I called for help for you. I thought you needed help, you know, so I was stranded. Because I guess people do that, you know, they down here, you know, everybody knows everybody, and they see somebody in trouble, they're going to try to help them out. Which that's fine. I said, okay, fine. Ambulance comes. He goes, you all right, sir? He knocks on the window. And I said, you know, I was feeling a little sick, so. You know, I didn't think nothing. He goes, well, why don't you come in the ambulance? I want to check you out. And I said, all right, fine. You know, I get a jump up in the ambulance. And he's checking me out. And he goes, well, you appear dehydrated. You know, it was real hot out that day for some reason. And, you know, it was early spring and it was real hot out. And he goes, I'm going to give you an IV. You know, he said, let me give you an IV to get you hydrated, you know. And I said, I don't know. You know, I said, he goes, well, let me give you the ID, and then you'll be on your way. I said, okay, fine. The other guy's pricking my finger to check my sugar, so I'm watching that. This guy puts a needle in my arm. He shoots me up with Narcan. I said, oh. And everybody knows Narcan is for someone who is overdosed and out like a light. And you're supposed to give him through, and he's supposed to do it through the nasal cavity. You're not supposed to inject them with it. So, but you can, but you're not supposed to, especially if they're coherent. And they're not on drugs. You're not supposed to do that. Because remember, you're supposed to be out like a light. You can put them in cardiac arrest, I found out. If you do research all this, it's, you know. And I'm like, what the hell are you shooting me up with, man? He goes, it's Narcan. Like that, you know, because we're going to clean the drugs out of your system. I said, what the hell are you talking about drugs? Like that, you know. And, you know, and I'm a guy, you know, I work out. I'm in good shape. I'm not, you know, I'm a suit and tie, you know. I'm you know, I mean. What the hell is he, this guy talking about? He says he saw a pill bottle in my console of my car. So immediately he assumes that I'm a doper and I'm on pills and I'm having an overdose, you know. And they're restrained. The guy puts me in a chokehold, even, the other guy, you know. And then I got a needle in my arm and I'm trying to get that crap out of me. I'm like, you know, and the other guy, he's a fat guy, big guy, you know, he's sitting on me. So I'm like, what the hell, I can't, I'm not going to resist now. I said, what's this stuff going to do to me, man? He goes, it's just going to clean you out, you know, and, you know. I said, I don't need to be cleaned out. He goes, stop denying it. I said, what are you talking about, man? You know, so now a state trooper comes rolling up. He peeks his head in the ambulance door. He goes, what do we got, fellas? He goes, we got a guy, a doper here. He had a reaction to Narcan. He goes, oh, really? He goes, is that your car out there, Mr. Gibson? I said, what are you talking about? He goes, well, I'm going to put you under arrest for DUI. I said, what? You know, so I said, what are you talking about? So what am I going to do? You know, I've always taught, don't resist, just go with it, and my people will fix it later on down the road. You know, because remember, I was, you know, I just made an undercover drug buy. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, what made me sick that day? You know, and I'm thinking, I remember when I made that drug buy. You know, this is later on. And I'm thinking, how did I get sick? How did this all happen? You know, because you start, you know, so I backtracked my steps. And I'm doing an investigation on myself. And the only way I came in contact with any type of drugs was when I made that undercover drug buy earlier. And I bought fentanyl, crystal meth, and 1/8 ball of crack cocaine. And I know cocaine doesn't make you feel that way, the crack. I didn't smoke no crack, so I know that for a fact. So I'm like thinking maybe some of the fentanyl must have spilt out in the cigarette pack that I had, because I smoke cigarettes, so, you know, not chain smoker, but, you know, maybe 5 a day, 6 a day, with all the stress I'm under. You know, and I'm thinking I must have gotten exposed to some of the drugs in there. You know, maybe, and I remember when the dealer was bagging up, I remember him telling me, I think back, he said, there might be a little hole in this bag, be careful. And that's why I put it in my cigarette pack. So, and when I turned it over to them, I remember telling the detectives, I said, be careful, there might be a little hole in there. And they got gloves on and everything. And I'm always wondering, why are they using gloves? You know, and they said, well, we don't want to expose this stuff, so it can kill you, you know. Yeah, meanwhile, you guys got me handling it, you know. I can't go in there and drug dealer's house with gloves on and bring a mask. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm posing as a drug dealer. So, I'm thinking I must have leaked out that day. And when I lit my cigarette, some must have been on the tip of my cigarette, and I ended up smoking that crap. And that's what made me feel really sick. That's what happened. Now, how am I going to explain that story to a judge? You know, so I contact my people, and they were supposed to, you know, take care of us. Now, Rockingham County, you know, they it's just, now we start getting into the specifics of the case and everything, and it just turns into another fiasco nightmare. So I hired this guy out of Winston-Salem, this guy, attorney Terrence Hines. Just my luck, I got the worst lawyer ever. Come to find out, he's entered pleas on behalf of other people. It's on Google Review, where he's entered pleas on for people on their behalf without them knowing, and they end up going to jail, some of these people. It's on the review. And this is what he does to me. I go to court one day. He said he entered a guilty plea. I said, no, you had no right to do that. The Good Samaritan law is supposed to protect me, because if you're experiencing an overdose or you're exposed to drugs, you are protected by the Good Samaritan law. That's what it says, the person who calls 911 and the person having an overdose. Look it up. It's a law that came out with here in North Carolina because of all the overdose problems they were having, because people are scared to call 911 when they have an overdose and people die, so they're trying to stop that. So, makes sense. So I'm fighting with the lawyer at the courthouse. I said, man, you're there. So I'm thinking, man, this isn't right. This isn't right. So I said, you fix this. I left, because I was getting ready to knock the guy out. I mean, I was ready to strangle him. I said, I have just left to defuse the situation because I did not want any problems. Because he had no right. I know the law. He was not supposed to do that. So, you know, $2,500 to play, and he did nothing over the last 2 years. Nothing. No discovery. He didn't contact anybody. He didn't contact the narcotics division to get my intel and get, you know, we could have had those guys brought into court and said, yeah, he was working undercover for us during this day. He wasn't DUI. You know, it was so simple, slam dunk case. All somebody had to do was talk to the judge and let them know what's going on, or even the prosecutor, and tell them. That's all they had to do, you know, why just put a little effort and work into it, you know, and you couldn't do that. And that's what I'm saying. So there's a lot of stuff in between that's happened. I just try to give a basic outline of basically my life over the last 33 years. Hopefully, you know, everyone can understand what. And like I said, if anybody's got any questions, or if they got, or something, they want proof of anything, or, you know, I don't know why, or if there's any reporters out there. I mean, I could prove everything that I just told you. Everything. Documented. Facts. So I'm not this bad guy, this neo-Nazi. Oh, let me explain to you where this neo-Nazi thing came from. Okay? I do a podcast show, right? And I interview, obviously, controversial people, and I interview everybody. I believe in the First Amendment. And I've had some NSM, National Socialist Movement people come on my show, and I've interviewed them. And one particular guy I had on, his name is Ronald Murray, he was on the show, and he found out that I was, you know, I worked undercover, and he started swearing at me, threatening me. This was live on the show, and, you know, and so I'm not a member of the National Socialist Movement. Where did they got this from? I just don't know. Just, you know, where they claim I'm a member. Well, the ADL apparently got a screenshot of somebody posting a comment, not me, posting a comment. It wasn't me. They claim it's from my Gab account, but it's not. The comment that they posted was a screenshot of someone else stating that they supported me in North Carolina. And this is at the same, this is back in 2022, because I did let them on my show and let them talk about their organization, and I interviewed them. So this automatically makes me a member and a supporter, I guess, and neo-Nazi. So that's where the ADL got that from, and that's where the story blew up and originated from. And the other stuff, obviously you could tell when I got in trouble when I was 18, so I'm a 80-time convicted felon and a monster of society. So, and the thing that I'd like to say, point out, is you notice how the media doesn't mention anything about the other stuff? Nothing. Nothing. Why is that? One reporter, cops from Congress, or cops from something, Congress, whatever, this little girl that interviewed me, mentioned it. I think Vice News did too, but they only touched upon it. And do you like how when they interview you, they'll interview you for like 10 minutes, but they only play like a 3-second clip of what you have to say, and they take it out of context during the interview, you know? And it's mind-boggling. But if you're somebody who doesn't know me, who doesn't know the facts, who doesn't know the whole story, you would believe the things that they say. You would take it out of context and believe what they're saying as a truth and error. So restoring your republic, that's what I stand for. I stand for the Constitution. I believe in the Constitution. I believe in this country. I do believe that if rules and laws are followed, the system can work. If you break the rules and don't follow the rules, the system will break down. And is there always going to be some sort of corruption or people out there that are not going to agree with or follow the rules or laws of society? Of course. You're always going to have some sort of crime. But the war on drugs, I will tell you firsthand, the things that I saw in dealing with drugs and all the people I've dealt with, drug dealers, posing as a drug dealer throughout the years, there is no war on drugs. It's a lie. It's false. And if there is a war, you cannot win. How can you declare a war on your own people? You can't win that way. How can you win? You cannot win that war. So what's the answer? How do you stop drug use? How do you deter it? How do you stop kids from wanting it? Arresting drug dealers is not the answer. Does that mean we let them go and let them do whatever they want? No. But I think perhaps, possibly, I mean, this is probably controversial, possibly legalization and education. You know, I'm not saying that it's okay that people can run around shooting dope up in your community. What I'm saying is you could have these clinics set up with all the money they spend on prosecuting people and the money spent on housing these people in jails and whatnot. You could set up these, instead of doing that, use that money to set up facilities where people can go, people that are not, I mean, you're going to have people that just don't want to change. But you have people out there that do want to change. I've met a lot of people that just don't want to live that type of life, but they're hooked. And when you're physically and chemically dependent on something, I've seen it. It's hard for them to come out of that situation and change their life. I've seen it. You know, I mean, that fentanyl stuff, that stuff, I've seen people. There's no kicking that habit without serious hardcore treatment. You know, I mean, it's bad. It's powerful. I mean, people that grew up in the 1980s remember the crack epidemic when that first came on the scene, and they thought that was so powerful, how it blew people's minds. You know, I mean, it's something, and this is a sickness in our country that has got to be addressed. And our political leaders and our politicians are not in touch with the streets of America, and they do not know. Or no, understand the working man and how we're out there living every single day, the people that are out there working 40 hours a week just to get by, that job just over broke, you know? That's what job stands for, just over broke. And the inflation out there, it's just, you just can't get ahead anymore today. And that's a whole nother story with the New World Order and everything else. I mean, I know I've left a lot of stuff out. It's hard to go everything detail for detail and explain everything to people. But some people ask me to, dive into a little bit of the story. And, you know, and there's things that I remember that I won't remember tonight, that I'll remember later on, things that have happened, key things. You got to remember, this was a big part of my life. I lived that life for so long. I mean, but just recently here in North Carolina, posing as a drug dealer, the people that I met, the people that I came in contact with, you know, really technically, you know, some of these people are, you know, that I did help get people locked up in jail. You know, I mean, and I don't agree with the jail system. I don't believe in the prison industrial complex, but at the same time, you know, you're selling fentanyl and you're killing people. You know, I think it's disgusting. I mean, people are capitalizing on people's sickness and they're selling them a poison that can kill them. And that stuff is powerful. I mean, look at what it did to me, a tiny little bit that was on the tip of my cigarette. It made me feel like crap. I felt like I was going to die. I mean, I was doubled over in pain. My stomach cramps. I mean, it was just weird, the feeling. I mean, imagine if that stuff came in contact with an amount that could have killed me. There are police that get touched that stuff, come in contact with it, and it puts them in the cardiac arrest. I mean, there's stories on YouTube. I mean, it's a dangerous drug. And China is manufacturing it and shipping it in from the southern border. I mean, there's a lot of things, too, back in the early 90s where I discovered through documents and paperwork and cases and talking to people through gang members and whatnot on how a lot of this stuff is being brought in. And I'm not going to get into all that right now in details because it's a long story, but there's a lot of people and players that I met that throughout the years that you would blow your mind of who's involved in this game. And even in our community here in North Carolina, the corruption, there was certain people that were working for the Guilford County Sheriff's Department that are corrupt. One of them is retired as of, I think last year he retired, but he was corrupt. I remember they asked me questions about him. I'm not going to throw his name out there because, you know, I'm not for legal reasons, but it's in your community, and there's people in your political arena that are corrupt, and it should be brought out in the open. But what good will it do? I mean, when people put their neck on the line for the community and they sacrifice and they get thrown under the bus, it deters other people from wanting to try to help. I mean, what's the purpose? What's the goal? What's the end game result? You're going to get a few people fired and screw up their lives and their families for what? To think that you're cleaning up a system that's already broken? We have to reset this system, and we have to restore our republic and our constitution first before we can even think about fixing the broken corporation that we have today. Because it's all about money. It's all about control. And there's a bigger facade going on globally that's controlling us today. And that's what we address on this podcast a lot, and we talk about it a lot, and a lot of other podcasts that I'm involved with on the internet today. And this is the alternative media, and this is where you're going to get the facts. You're not going to get it from Fox 61 News. You're not going to get it from Channel 8, Channel 2 News. You're not going to get the truth. So anyway, I got one caller here with their hand up, so we'll go with that and see what they want to say. I'll start taking some, anybody wants to call in, ask questions or whatever, that's fine, or make comments about the news of today. Hopefully I shed a little bit of light on some things. Go ahead, private caller.
Good evening, Joe. You know who this is. You know,
oh,
I'm sorry
boy.
To hear.
I was talking about
okay,
you.
well, I still hope, you know, the listeners are still calling to my podcast and be friends anyway. Okay, first of all, Joe, I'm sorry to hear about the afflictions that you went through. But keep in mind, man, this is what happens in the black community on a great basis, particularly out there in the West, okay?
Yes, it does.
You know,
you're
we don't
right.
man. Yeah, okay. And then also, too, your boy Ronald Reagan, okay, he was involved in mm-hmm. it as well, too. He flooded South Central Los Angeles with that crap, you know what I'm saying, that led to a lot of
yes,
mass
he did.
Mass incarceration. So did your boy Slick Willie when he went up there and signed that federal crime bill. And his current senile bastard that you got up there by the name of Hyde and Biden, who keeps shitting on himself, he's the one that pushed it through the Congress, the federal crime bill. Then I was speaking with a loved one of mine about how diabolical Biden is and what have you. And then he had stated, which was a fact, is that you had a lot of those in the black community, particularly in the inner city, that asked, well, you know, we just want the people to just to do something. We want the law enforcement just to do something and what have you. And you cannot, like I always argue with Sarge Witten, we had him on there yesterday morning. You should have joined in, Joe. Great show. Great show. We talked about O.J. Simpson's transition.
Oh, boy.
And then, of course, it was off the hook. It was off the hook. And then keep in mind, we had a scholar that called in who I approached to come on, and she clearly had stated that I don't have a problem with it. Shabaka, we love your Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced, but curtail on the cursing. And there was no cursing on it whatsoever. But, you know, Sarge is Sarge. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah, where is Sarge tonight? If he's out there, Sarge, why don't you press one, Sarge? You didn't hear me talk, maybe
hey,
talk
man,
about the,
let him know that he's AWOL, man, that he is absent without leave, man, and he is subjugated to an Article 15 and to be court-martialed. Okay. Now, Joe,
yeah.
I found it very interesting, man. Forgive me for saying so. If you were saying things, man, and for all practical purposes, man, that you were saying that you was labeled as a snitch, man, when you was on the inside. That could be extremely, very, very dangerous, you know what I'm saying? And I don't have to all that as well, too. But now, as far as that fentanyl shit is concerned.
I was president of the Latin Kings, okay?
Okay.
The largest gang in the Northeast. You know, so, yeah.
Okay, well, Joe, we're not going to talk about my knowledge of such organizations, and I'm not ever going to talk about it, you know what I mean? You know, it's all lies, everything. They say you ain't did this, they said you ain't did that, I said, yes, but it's all lies.
Yeah, let's get away from that.
Everything. Okay, all right. But however, though, you have to understand is that you got a lot of these politicians, man, you know, that is involved off of that. I mean, look at Hunter Biden.
Yes,
you know what I mean? Look at him.
Yeah.
Okay. Look at some of the people in the dump regime. You see what I mean? I know. And by
well,
the way,
let me ask you this question. What about the cocaine they found in the White House? Remember that story? Where'd that come from?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
You know,
from what I understand, it was some weight on it as well, too. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't no half ounce.
Yeah.
It wasn't no ounce. I mean, it was some heavy weight on it. So who knows? Maybe somebody was dropping Biden off a shipment. You know what I'm saying? But however, though, Joe, you and I have different perspectives on things, and we will continue to have different perspective on things. And then, of course, I'm sorry to hear about you, man, being shanked on the inside, you know what I mean, because getting hit there on the carotid artery, that could be extremely dangerous, you see. But however, as I've always advocate, that I would always continue to advocate, is the black community to become self-sufficient economically, is because of what's going over there in Africa, man. You know, that pisses us off a little bit, is because on our continent, they're taking all the raw material out there, the gold, the bauxite, the tungsten, you know what I'm saying? And then China, Russia, and what have you. Okay, now if we disagreed with this, okay, what the problem is, Joe, is the colonialization of Africa and the neo colonialists. And also, too, man, you had wrote in our chat room the last time on our podcast, okay, and Sarge was there, and I was going back and forth with Sarge, but what you wrote, Joe, on those statues were ambiguous, okay.
You don't agree with that, huh?
Okay, no. It's not a question if I agree or disagree, Joe. But from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that any statute that is so ambiguous, okay, and so complicated that cannot be understood by the common man is not a statue, okay, that there's what Dr. Huey Percy Newton has stated off in his writings and what have you. Now, the thing is, we are still for the reparations, okay, it's because our sweat, blood, and labor benefited the United States government, okay. Freedom was not reparations, okay. They lied about the 40 acres and the mule. Andrew Johnson, you know, had
Chewbacca, hang on. With all due respect, hang on. What about the lies that's been told to all the American people, though? I understand that you just want to represent the black community. That's fine. But their lies have been told to a lot of people. So why aren't they entitled to reparations also? Or should they all
be entitled?
Well,
Joe,
how would that work?
Okay, Joe, that is up to him. Now, just as Chef Rob and Sarge got into an argument on my platform about how the Japanese who interned after World War II, they were compensated, you know what I'm saying? They weren't in slavery or incarcerated or, how should we say, put off in a uncomfortable position for no 400 years.
Okay.
I believe they were incarcerated like, oh boy, Pearl Harbor, 1941, okay, atomic bomb, 1945. So I figured they were interned from 1942 to about 1945, and they were compensated because you had internment camps in Idaho. He had internment camps, let me see, Montana. I think you might have had one in California,
well,
but I'm not sure.
Let me ask you this question. What do you think about the conflict right now with Iran and Israel? I mean, if Kay's out there, I'm sure Kay's got a cool comment about that, but if he could press one or anybody wants to talk to that's what's in the headlines
now. Okay, all right. Now, however, the only thing I could say about this and that is this. With the Middle East conflict, man, in the black community, man, there are certain issues that's going on with that. Okay, you were not on the podcast, you know, when we had someone who was very, very knowledgeable about it that spoke. The only thing I could state is that what Pan-Africa needs to do, which is the continent, which is all of us in the diaspora, North America, Central America, Brazil, South America, and what have you, we have got to pool our economical resources to preserve ourselves and repair the damage that we have been through. Now, everybody in the black community is not Uncle Tim Scott, Joe. Okay, Uncle Tim Scott, man, is disgusting. Okay, he really is disgusting. We're not all
Uncle
Remus.
You don't like
Remus.
Him, I know. I know.
Say that again.
You don't like him, I know. You don't support him, I know.
No. And we make it very, very clear. It's because individuals like that are extremely dangerous to black progress is because they countermanded it. The same thing with the Congressional Black Caucus. Okay, now, on the O.J. Simpson case, okay, O.J. is gone. Yep. He died in Las Vegas. Condolences to his family. But that case, 1994, and I was...
He passed away?
Yeah, O.J. Simpson is dead.
Oh, no, I
didn't
know that.
Yeah, O.J. Simpson died. Yeah, he died 2 days ago. He was 76.
Wow.
Yeah, he passed away here in Las Vegas, okay. So we do Grand Rising on Fridays, okay. We had Sarge on there yesterday morning, and, you know, Sarge is Sarge, okay, and what have you. And we also, too, you know, had one of our contributors there, the doctor, you know, who stated that she will participate.
Yeah,
it,
that's my phone number. Hang on.
Hang on.
So I got somebody in the chat room there. 657-383-0616. When you call in, press 1, and because I got a bunch of numbers on my screen, and that's where I know who the person is that's calling in, okay? So I know that person wants to call in. Okay, there they go. Chewbacca, I got another caller here on the other line, so I'll give you another couple minutes to wrap it up. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Okay, yeah, and you know, and I'll debate with him. Okay, so that's what we spoke about. I still believe that O.J. Simpson was innocent is because I believe off of research that I've done, now I'm going back 30 years, Joe, okay, yep. Is that she was on drugs, okay. She was always going to O.J. to bail her out, you know, and then the cartel, they came there to make
but
a collection. She didn't have the money.
I don't want to debate on this, but that doesn't give a person a reason to be killed, you know, just because she's on drugs.
Okay, Joe, she owed, okay? O.J. was always bailing her out, okay? O.J. was always picking up the tab, you see what I'm saying? So they came to collect, and she didn't have it. Now, Johnny Cochran, and I'm going to say these last two sentences and let your other caller come on, is that Johnny Cochran, in his opening statement of the case, Joe, he stated is that I got three witnesses who's going to testify that they saw four men running from the murder scene, okay, and one of them was being carried, okay. So then Ron Goldman had his knuckles all busted up, as you know, from being in street fights and stuff like that. That means he was in a fight for his life. The adrenaline is for self-preservation to stay alive, okay. But then, man, none of them, okay, ever were brought to court. It's because one got deported. And two of them came up dead. You see what I mean? So, you know, the O.J. Simpson case, man, is kind of interesting. And then, of course, Dr. Henry Lee, who was reviewing the evidence of it, of the botched investigation that the LAPD had made, you know, they're saying that stuff was placed and this, that, there, the other. And to close out my comment, Dr. Henry Lee said that I agree with something not right.
Well, all right. Well, I appreciate it, Chewbacca. I mean, I'm not going to cut you off, but I appreciate it. I know
no, let your other caller
callers.
Come on. Let your other caller come on.
All right.
On.
Let's see here. Area code. There you go. You'll hear unmuted. Go ahead. Sound like this. Your number is private. Go ahead there, 206.
Yeah, Joe, this is Ethan Mattern. We've interchanged on next door and had some conversations. I'm good, man. The whole O.J. thing has always been a challenge, and I'm not going to get into that as a debate. His son has multiple felonies and had knife-associated conflicts. There's some validation and some conspiracy theory associated with the fact that he's covering for his son, but I don't want to dig into that.
No,
I'm really more interested in tying back into your background and really this conversion into the attempt to change Rockingham County. We all know that there is a reality that whether it's local government or foreign government, that they are not representing the population. That's a reality.
Correct.
My real question to you, with all the background and all the and I understanding your side of the story, and I've done a bunch of digging since we've interchanged a few times, all by communication on text. That this really was an establishment desire to push you out of the mix. My question is, and something that I'm asking specifically because I don't want to be in politics, but I'm starting to take a realization that those of us that need to stand up, who don't give a shit about the establishment, that we really want to make a difference. We believe in God. We believe in the Constitution. We believe in the organization. How much did you spend on your when you made the run for the seat? How did you invest it? How did you get started in it? How did you make a name for yourself? Because in reality, I'm interested not necessarily in running. You know, I'm a bit of a chicken shit that way. Pardon my language. I don't know that I hate myself enough to run for policy. But if the decision is that those of us that have a willingness to stand for the people, not the establishment, how did you run for it? What did you do? What did you spend? You know, I've had some interactions with Diane with the RNC here, and it's evident that there is a bias and a political relationship associated. Can you just talk a little bit about how you ran for office and what you faced when you jumped into it?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'll try to do that as much possible. Who's got the background? Somebody's got background noise, whoever it is, because I'll just have to, I don't want to, you know, because that could be distracting. Basically, you know, it's not that hard to get your hat thrown in the ring. It doesn't cost anything but the filing fee, for starters, okay? But to get your name out there and to get the media to pay attention to you and to get people to know your name is very difficult. It takes money, and it takes knowing people. And I went down to the meeting down there on Piedmont Street in Reidsville, and at first everybody went, hey, how you doing, how you doing? But as soon as they know who – they find out who you are and that you're running against some of their ideas, or you want to challenge them on policy and you have your own ideas, you get the cold shoulder. All of a sudden now, you know, we need to look into this guy, and they want to start digging up your past and seeing where where's this guy coming from? What's his real agenda? It seems like there's always an ulterior motive that someone has to have, and that's wrong. Instead of judging that person by the content of their character and how they represent themselves today and what they plan for the future, and to look for the better future for tomorrow, to change the wrongs that we're committing today, they want to look at yesterday so much. You know, everyone wants to know what you did 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and I don't think that should be a factor. And they use it against you, everything negative. They don't use anything positive for your benefit. I noticed that. Now, as far as the money aspect goes, Go ahead. You can interrupt any time with a question if I start going off as where I shouldn't be.
Yeah, no, Joe, it wasn't an interruption so much. It was just, you know, I know that your story is based on you had a starting point that was challenging, but you came here and you did good things. But what I've recognized is even my basic efforts in the county to reach out to the RNC, and I'm registered independent. So my initial and the reason I say that is I'm a constitutionalist. So I tend to lean right based on the fact that where we have gone, the current and the modern day Republican Party has become relatively centrist. Exceptions being the case, but the left has moved to fully Marxist. That's just a baseline. It's a reality that they are much more organized than us. So when I reached out to the Republican Party in Rockingham County, being a guy who's not historically been political, understand my background. I spent 8 years in the military in special operations and aeromedical evacuation. After that, I did 20 years in defense contracting, and I currently run the global political sector for DHL Express, which is a competitor to FedEx and UPS. I work with the United Nations, World Health Organization, the CDC, the federal agencies, the Department of Defense, and I live in that swamp. So I am regularly involved at a career level, but I'm not interested in running at a national level. I am really interested in trying to focus on, and the reason is, in the last 30 years, I've moved 17 times. I've lived in the Middle East. I've lived in Asia, the West Coast. 5 years ago, when the election, we can call it, was not necessarily fully measured. that the decisions that came out of that election led me to buy a piece of property that had a little bit more space and to get away from town. I have just started being involved. Yeah, exactly. And so I say that only to say that I'm starting, and you know, you've been aware of our group. We're trying to build some communication and some relationship inside the county so that there's some like-minded America First people that are associated with our
I see what you're doing in that group. I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing in that group. You're putting comments out there and you're fishing for people to get involved and finding out who's out there, you know?
Exactly. It's literally just an attempt. And you know, it's funny, and I say this only to say that I understand exactly what the establishment did to you, is I've only been doing this for the last 3 or 4 months, and I've already had quite a few attacks on my character and on my personality. And I don't have a desire to have a following. I don't want to have – I'm not interested in my name being raised in lights. What I am interested in is the future of our country and starting at a baseline. Everyone is interested in the presidential election. what terrified me and what really got me interested is our local elections. We have 100,000 people in our county, and 3,900 people voted in a local election for
I
the
know.
Local. And that's terrifying to me. That is. You know, 400 or 500 interested people could absolutely shift the direction of a county is what drove me to start the group and to start having the conversations.
That's the reason why just what you said right there is I wanted to reach out to those people that are sitting on their couch saying, leave me alone. I don't want to get involved. It doesn't bother me. But they're out there complaining at the same time, and they don't know it, but they are involved. Just not directly. They're indirectly involved, and they should get more directly involved. Maybe not, like you said, for name recognition, but to change the things that they see that are wrong.
Absolutely. So the question is, how do we motivate? And I know you ran for office, and they crucified you. And I recognize,
oh,
I did the research. We haven't done a lot of that deep dive. We haven't had a chance to have a conversation offline of this.
Yeah, I know.
But I did enough research that I recognize that they quite literally used a couple of snippets to just absolutely devastate you. And I'm a little nervous about that, to be honest.
Yeah. It was crazy. I was a security officer, right? And I'm trying to get a license with the state of North Carolina, and they blackballed me. They wouldn't even allow me to get a license. And here I am, I'm a guy, I stopped a robbery attempt at Estes Trucking. I got employee of the month out of 3,000 employees, and yet I'm fired the next month later. You know, I mean, insane. What do I do?
Well, that's
do?
All political,
you know?
Joe.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, yeah. That's the thing that's terrifying. And to your other guest, I apologize. I don't know your name, but that whether you're black or you're white, the environment that we live in is that the organization, the establishment, has determined that there are enemies, and those enemies are anybody who doesn't capitulate. Whether you're black or you're white, my wife is Chinese. My aunt's married to a black guy. I'm a 6-foot-tall white guy, so I fall into the category of all of the entitled folks. But I'm a military veteran, and you can notice from my absence of accent, my dad's from Ohio, my mom's from California. I grew up mostly in Virginia.
Your dad is an awesome guy. Your dad
years.
Is an awesome guy. I know that right off the bat just by watching that video right there. And I would say I'd be honored to have a conversation with him. He seems like somebody that is inspiring and someone that can fill a room that's dark with light. You know.
Well, Joey,
I just want to say that.
Yeah, no, listen, if you're interested, and for your guest, if you Google Smoking Leviticus, it's my dad's testimony. But, Joe, I can hook you up with my dad to have a conversation, and I'm positive he'd join your message just because he's all about spreading the word. But what I'm trying to say ultimately is we have a small county, and in our county there are a certain handful of names that are established and their establishment. And for those of us that want to jump in and create an environment where we, the people, have a voice, those of us that don't want to get rich off of politics, but we actually want to be representatives of the people and try to draw in the folks that are sitting on their couch and they are listening to this, how do we go about doing that in a way that actually drives? And I'm willing to take the risk of whatever stories and things that are in my closet. My son is a drug dealer and has his own problems, and I've made my own mistakes in life, and we're all trying to be the best people that we can be. I personally don't have any
scar. None of us are perfect, brother.
So
none of us are perfect. None of us. You know, we all make mistakes, and we all continue to make them.
But all
okay,
that
if I may
say,
interject
we...
for a minute.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, sir. Okay. In respect to the gentleman, you know, that you have on there, very, very articulate gentleman, and also, too, I could tell he's very educated. But as you know, Joe, that I've always advocated, and I will continue to advocate, you know, black businesses, you see what I'm saying, you know, becoming economically self-sufficient. Okay. So the simple fact is, No one enjoys unemployment as high as we do, okay? We don't enjoy it and whatnot. Plus that, the shattering of the black family unit that they did with the welfare system. And Dr. Francis Cress Wilson, you know, has wrote great works on this right here. And what we have to do on the continent of Africa, we have to get back our control of our resources, because the Chinese are there, the Russians are there, and what the main enemy is neo-colonialism. I'm talking about the ones, you know, that's on the puppet strings. You know, all of us are familiar with Mario Puzo's book. I'm not going to mention the name, where he's got people on the puppet strings, and we have to sever that. Now, there was a couple of individuals who were heads of state in Africa in the early 60s that the French and the Belgians and that the United States participated in their assassinations. One of them was Patrice Lumumba, okay? Another one was a gentleman by the name of Thomas Sankara, okay? I believe Sankara was over there in Guinea-Bissau, if I'm not mistaken. And they killed him is because he was talking about being self-sufficient. When they kicked out the French, beautiful. Okay. Then when the Biden regime had sent one of their envoys over there to speak to President Museveni of Uganda about talking about, well, you guys got to have a alphabetized agenda, the president of Uganda, President Museveni, had stated that in our society we place great emphasis on procreation that only happens between man and woman. So the Biden dude said, well, we'll take away, you know, your aid. And President Museveni said, hey, man, take your aid and get up out of here. And about 3 seconds later, he said, hey, man, you still here? We're not endorsing that crap. You know what I'm saying? They have their human rights. They have their civil rights. And as you and I have debated for years now, Joe, African societies place great emphasis on procreation. That only happens between a union between a man and a woman, not some dude, man, shoving ketchup up his rectum talking about that he's having a menstrual cycle.
Yeah,
is a direct insult to the sanctimony of womanhood, okay? And I get tired of all this crap that I get bombarded with, man, on social media, alphabetized, and I just go with delete and block. You know what I mean?
But hang on. Let me just say this. But what this gentleman is also saying is you're not going to change any of that on the national or global scale until you get hands on the local community that you're in first. It has to start grassroots.
Okay, well,
that's
funny
what I
you, okay. Joe, funny you should say that is because, you see, this is what Dr. King did with the Montgomery bus boycott, okay, is because when Rosa Parks was arrested, you know, because she refused to give up her seat, Dr. King had came through there and stated, hey, walk to work, ride a moped, a motorcycle, man, you know, four wheels in a seat, but
don't
do
take the
not
bus, yeah.
Ride the bus, and it almost broke the Montgomery Bus Company. But then you had old Frog Face down there, old George Wallace, you know his infamous line, segregation yesterday, segregation today, and segregation tomorrow. Okay, now on the reparations. We built your nation off of our sweat and labor, free labor, Joe. And that is a very, very huge insult to say that we don't deserve reparations. And by the way, if you ever come across that scum, Larry Elder, give him my phone number and hook up to my podcast, because I'm reading his book, and this is some of the most asinine garbage, man, that I've seen. Now, keep in mind, Joe, I could be very, very articulate without using, you know, F-bombs and things of that nature.
Well,
right,
good,
there, because
I prefer that.
Okay, hold on, Joe. And we were admonished by, you know, one of our contributors to our podcast that you're familiar with, okay? And she had stated to me is that, yeah, I will appear on your show, but don't use the language. And we didn't. And we finally had, you know, something on end. And then Sarge was on end, and the good doctor and the Sarge went back and forth. And once again, Joe, we had administered Sarge a couple of standing eight counts. And what have you?
I don't want to divert from the general topic at hand. We're trying to talk local. We're trying to stick locally here. I want to stay with the conversation that the gentleman brought up. Is how we can fix things locally.
I do think. Yeah. So, Joe, I would say the one thing
one thing that Martin Luther King really talked about was the intelligence plus character. That's the goal of true education. And yep. One of the things that we have recognized as a wider whole, and it doesn't matter what you're talking about from an education perspective, and I agree with your guest, our system is broken, whether it's the nuclear family and the fact that our system has been denigrated to create an environment where nuclear families don't matter. Parental involvement,
especially in the black community,
Absolutely.
I could relate to you on that. Check out some of my past episodes, sir. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I'll message Joe to get your information because I'm interested, sir, in your podcast as well. My point ultimately is, in our county, there's 100,000 people, and about 30% of our county is African American. In our county, 3,900 people voted in our local community elections. Those are the elections that are the school boards. They're the people that are educating our children. They're the people that are involved in our processes. And ultimately, what I'm interested in, I don't want to run for national elections. I don't really want to run for any election, but ultimately, If the requirement is that some of us stand up and fight the establishment, like Joe has tried to do, I don't necessarily have the scar tissue that they can use against me that they did with Joe. And ultimately, I truly believe, for example, I was just on the news a couple of days ago about the property tax increases in our county. After they didn't get our casino approved this go around, it's going to come back up, and the long situation is it'll probably be approved. But property taxes in this county, they just reappraised everybody for anywhere from 50% to 100% more, and I am in a situation where I can afford to absorb those increases. But there's a lot of fixed income. The vast majority of the people in our county are retirement age, disabled, and or on some sort of assistance. And that's going to have a real impact. But the people that are running in our county right now, the people that are running our county right now, white, black, yellow, it doesn't matter, they're not prioritizing the population. They're not being representatives of the people Correct. Of this county. And so as
that's
I look
at a
potential run, and that is the question. How do we, as the voice of the people, become the actual voice of the people? How do we build a grassroots environment in our county where people stop sitting on their couch, listening to the mainstream media, and start getting involved? Because like my brother there, who's talking about the African-American population and the challenges that they faced, all of us need to step up and have a conversation about what it is we can do to make our voice heard, so that we can change the way that this county and the state and the country are directed, so that where there's a recognition that the people, the vast majority, not the 2% that are currently driving our population. I work in Washington, D.C. I manage logistics for the United Nations and for NATO. And I can tell you that the graft and the corruption is just as bad in our county as it is in the global environment. And I move over 2 million shipments a year for the Department of Defense. My security clearances and my involvement, we've been at war in World War III for the last 10 months, but it's not been stated. The fact is that what we can change is our local environment. And that's where I'm interested in having a conversation about how do we drive a conversation that gets people interested so that people stop sitting on their ass and watching TV and The View and actually get involved. How do we do that?
Yep. Well, Go ahead, you go first, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Okay. But what it is that people have lost faith, particularly in the black community, in these politicians. Now, to prove your point even further, sir, when I look at Tim Scott, when I look at the Congressional Black Caucus, that are more interested in issues other than what serves the black community on a direct basis. The first one is being, you know, these questionable police killings, okay? Now, your current vice president, okay, oh, God, her I cannot stand, okay? There was some questionable police killings in California where she was the attorney general, and as we all know, the attorney general is the chief law enforcement officer of said state, if not, you know, at the local, federal, and state level. And she did not intervene none whatsoever. And then Mike Pence, when she was in a vice presidential debate, had told her that the majority of your people who were incarcerated on these MJ convictions, you let them still sit there when California had passed a law through the initiative process, you know, to have these records expunged and they were supposed to be released. She didn't do it. That's an impeachable offense. But, however, Kamala has a tainted reputation, as we all know, and I'm not going to get off into that. You know what I mean? So that's what the problem is. But with the black community, throughout a whole Pan-African aspect, has to solidify itself, and then we might sit down and talk. You see what I mean? It's because I'm tired of seeing young black men referring to themselves as the NJR term and going around, you know, sagging their pants. You know what I mean? And that's not good.
I think one of the things that's important to recognize is that Kamala Harris is half Indian and half white and married to a white man. She's not black.
Oh, yeah.
She is presented
her from
as
Jamaica.
Black, right?
No, her father's from Jamaica. And her mother's from India. Yes, sir. You are correct.
So you take that back to the baseline. She's a marketing aspect. She's not a real person.
Okay.
And she has put more people away. She brags about smoking weed herself and then put thousands of people away for it. The whole point is, and this goes back to the original conversation and the starting point of Joe's presentation of his own story, is that the establishment media takes a story and they create a story. So, for example, my conversation just a couple of days ago with our local news organization about, and this is back to the local community, about our property taxes and the fact that they've gone up from between 50 and 100% in our county, which has, in the last 12 years, only four of the last 12 years have we seen an increase in population. And the largest increase in population was 0.8%. I spent 10 minutes talking to the news anchor, and they used 30 seconds of my conversation. And they cut out the things that actually talked about what is important to the marketplace, right? So all that to say that Kamala Harris, she's a marketing point. She beyond the fact that she has that ridiculous, chattering, hilarious laughter, or her attempt to go to Puerto Rico where she's dancing to a song that's mocking her, she's a non-entity, but she is made up, and she's been presented as an African-American woman. In reality, that's not her case, and she doesn't give a shit about the people that are in the African-American community, because I agree with you.
No, that's a fact.
Our system,
our
system is not built to focus on the working-class people, whether it's the Federal Reserve that's built to create lower income for easier access corporate.
Hang on 1 second. We got 90 seconds. Hang on, guys. We got 90 seconds. So whoever's listening on the internet or in the chat room, if you want to call in real quick. We'll go a little bit over here. 657-383-0616. Okay. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I get a little tone in my ear that says we got time left. So go ahead.
Yeah. No, Joe. All that to say that. And I would say this to my brother on the other side of the aisle there, who's talking about it from an African American perspective. I think the reality is that the variable that we're all in is the working class people and the 98% against the 2%. And our representatives have stopped being representatives. Whether it is this latest, the FISA deal that our speaker voted for 2 days ago to come out with the new Save the Vote Act that they're putting forward that is not going to pass the Senate.
is that the people in Washington, D.C., and I've worked with them for 20 years now, they don't care about the people in this country. They care about the corporate donors, and they care about the organizations that make an impact on their ability to run for their next office. Because unlike China, where they've got a 100-year plan, we're looking at the next 2 or 6 or 4 years, depending on which position in the government you are. I don't care about the corporate environment. I care about the people in this country. Whatever color, how much melanin we have in our skin, my measure is how do we fix our education system so it's not brainwashing our kids with bullshit and that we're actually teaching them something that allows them to be an impact on our market.
I wanted to ask you before, in case we do get cut off, do you mind if I give you a call after the podcast here tonight? I'll call you personally. I might, you know, off the air. You mind, or would you rather me call you tomorrow?
Joe, either tonight or tomorrow, either way you want. I'm happy to have a conversation, brother.
All right. I know, some things that, of course, we can discuss, you know, off the air. I got another caller here who wants to connect to you real quick. So we got a few minutes left, so let's see what they got to say. 214, go ahead. You're on a conversation with us. Go ahead. Just watch your language, everybody, please. I said that earlier. Thank you. Go ahead.
Sorry, Joe.
No. It's not you. I was just saying other people that may call in. They, you know, I just wanted to chill because I got warnings about it. You know, people got complaining. That's all. That's all. I mean, I know people still love to say things.
Go ahead, here, 214.
Yeah. 214, go ahead.
This is Gunslinger.
Hey, Mr. Gunslinger.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, the old saying goes. You know, until these idiots get out of the office that they're in right now, nothing's going to change. How's it going to change? The people keep these dumb people, and I'm trying to use my language. You know my language. I tell you how it is. I don't beat the bush. Okay? These dumb people out here called American citizens keep voting for the same people. Kamala Harris, oh, my God. Jesus Christ, you got to be kidding. I'm waiting for her to lay an egg size of a basketball.
You're down in Texas, so you're affected by the policies of the Biden administration firsthand, especially the border crisis. You know? How is that affecting you now, today?
You know, they're all over the place. They're like, we're being invaded like cockroaches. Okay, you know me. I'm a master electrician, electrical engineer, retired. And you know, it's like you go into a service call and you flip the lights on, and the room's full of cockroaches, and they scatter. Well, that's what they're doing down here in Texas. Ridiculous.
Wow.
I mean, they're
good forecast.
Thank God
for
Biden. All right, now I got Biden on my name. Thank God for Governor Abbott down here. He's put his foot down. More governors need to do exactly what Governor Abbott has done down here in Texas. Razor wire. Bring in the National Guard. You know, whatever it takes, we're being invaded. Yeah. This is an invasion.
It's an invasion. Yeah.
Yeah, just like war. Yeah. But you see, if you click on the link I got in the chat room, that's my hat that I wear when I go out. Best $20 I ever freaking spent in my life.
Well, Gunslinger, if I may say, Gunslinger, you and I were acquainted with each other about a few years back, okay? And what had happened was we were talking, and I guess you had a co-host with you, and then they pulled the plug on the show of what we were talking about, okay? I'm an advocate of the Second Amendment. Now, what they did to the Black Panther Party, man, was in total violation of their Second Amendment. That right is not to be infringed. It's because your 40th president, when he was the governor of the great state of California, which I am no longer a resident of, okay, they signed the Gun Control Act, the Mulford Act, okay? Now, in the state of California, when you transport your firearm, the ammo and the weapon has to be separated, and it has to be in the trunk. This is a direct violation of the Second Amendment. And I think the appellate courts, or one of the circuit courts at the federal level, had stated that California might be in violation of it, but the U.S. Supreme Court is yet to pick it up. I wonder why, you see. But we had a interesting debate there, Gunslinger, you know what I'm saying? And Chewbacca's Black Experience Enhanced, we deal with the Black experience from the beginning of time to 10 minutes ago. And we do not back Kamala Harris, I hate to say, gentlemen, I might be on the couch for the federal election, you know what I'm saying, but I am going to take part in the local election, is because, as the gentleman had stated, is that's where the true power lies at, is at the local level, is because they will set the policy, you know, for the federal level also, too, in addition to. The police department, okay, they're not obligated to protect you. The police department is not elected officials. They are policy enforcers. And I think me and your man Bianchi got into this huge debate about it when we was talking about the Dred Scott case and things of that nature right there, is because, as you know, your modern-day police department evolved from the slave catchers or the slave patrollers. And the great state of Texas, yeah, they had them, man. They were quite vicious as well, too. Now, as far as these migrants coming in, lock and load, is because, you know, recently I took a trip out of state, and a migrant who saw me, you know, go to like a 7-Eleven, asked me for some money. I told him, man, get out my face. The same individual knocked on my hotel room door, and I says, look, man, I don't know if you speak English or not, but it's like this. In about 30 seconds, man, I'm going to start bouncing you off this wall, man, because I'm about to treat it as an attempted robbery. Broke back and all, you know what I'm saying? Okay, and Governor Budd, you know, they put up the razor wire. Now, these black mayors who are enabling these migrants, one would be Brandon Johnson of Chicago, Eric Adams, I cannot stand, okay, Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles. See, these black politicians are doing things for every other group except the black community. And keep in mind, the gentleman had mentioned Dr. King. Dr. King was declared public enemy number one by transvestite by the name of John Edgar Hoover, you know what I'm saying? And what he did with the Black Panther Party, he declared them public enemy number one, and he stated that the organization of Negroes is a threat to the national security of the United States. Now, with me being a black man in America, he just put my life and my loved ones' lives in danger with this, okay?
That's true.
Because of all all these questionable police killings. Now, what happened down in Memphis, okay, where those four black officers had killed that man, that was a personal thing. I have no sympathy for him. Put him in a gas chamber. Use him for experiments. I don't care about that. It's because a black police officer is worser than a white police officer. You see what I mean? Oh, yeah, because I've been through it. You see what I'm saying? And the worst experiences that I've had has been with black police officers. But however, I understand his sickness. I understand his self-hatred. You see what I mean? And if anybody, before I do, ever comes across Sergeant Cyril Dorsey, who retired from the LAPD, give it a number to my podcast, because me and Sergeant Dorsey got a whole lot to talk about of the policing policies there in Los Angeles. And then to give you more insight on it, read a book called Chief by Daryl Gates, who was an avid racist who made the statement before the U.S. Congress now that all casual drug users need to be taken out and shot, and his own son, who was on drugs, that went out there and committed an armed robbery to support his habit. Okay, on that I yield.
Well, you know,
I want to hear you guys. Hang on, Gunslinger. Yeah, because I don't have much time left. I want you guys go ahead and give your closing thoughts to tonight's whatever you heard or comments, please. You don't mind. So, Gunslinger, you go first. Go ahead. Say whatever you got to say, and we'll get ready to wrap it up. Go ahead.
Okay. You probably heard me from a number of years ago. I was on a show called Talk America USA with Billy Montana and the Gunslinger. I'm the Gunslinger.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And for all these illegals coming over here, like I said, I live just outside of Dallas. I'm not right on the border, thank God. But anyway, they're infesting the entire state of Texas, okay, whether you live on the border or whether you don't. I mean, I've seen the influence up here just outside of Dallas every time I go out, go here or there or whatever. I used to only carry two speed loaders. I carry 60 rounds on my gun belt. You know, we have constitutional carry here in Texas.
Okay,
I upgraded to
okay.
60 rounds, a 9mm. Okay, because
okay.
I see these idiots all the time, you know, waiting, begging for money, doing this on the street corner. Are you kidding me? There's the invasion. Go ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead, mm-hmm. Chewbacca, closing thoughts, and then I'll let my new caller here give his final thoughts.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay.
Now, I agree with Gunslinger to a point. It's because they're not even doing no background checks on these individuals who's crossing over the border, you know what I mean, on top of that. And then Hiding Biden, he belongs impeached. I hope they impeach him. You know what I'm saying? It's because, you know, he messed up your tax codes that I had to go through a bunch of rigmarole through when I filed my taxes recently. Okay, but what it is, though, is I have to say this here, is that we need black self-sufficiency on economics, on education, and what have you. Now, Dr. Martin Luther King himself, Joe, has stated, and you can research it shortly before his assassination, that he did lead the black community into a burning house with integration. He should have placed more emphasis on building businesses and becoming self-sufficient. Now, this is not racism. I mean, you know, trade with anybody, you know, what they call free market and what have you. And Marxism, I'm down on that. It's because I came across information where Karl Marx has stated that black people were too stupid, you know, to even understand the concept of Marxism. Okay, and we've had some debates, you know, on our podcast about that. Now, as far as us being, well, we're all the same. No, we are not the same. Do you know how boring this thing called life would be if we were all the same?
Yeah. I agree.
And I yield.
All right.
And
that's my closing statement. Do I say your name properly, Ethan? Is that it?
Yeah, it's Ethan.
Okay. Then,
you know,
go ahead. I'll give you some thoughts here at the end. Go ahead.
I think that we are at a breaking point in this country. Regardless of your race, your creed, your religion, the FISA vote that our speaker, who is supposed to be the constitutionally minded Louisiana representative, was the breaking vote. To extend the FISA visas to allow FBI to do U.S. citizen warrantless searches against people. And it included the new ATF guidelines that you can't sell more than two guns in a year without being an FTL licensed person. We have so many things that are happening from an executive and a congressional and a senatorial perspective right now that are so anti-constitutional that we are in an environment right now where the arguments about whether our race, our creed, our religion, it is truly the elite class versus the working class. And we're in a place where if people don't stand up and start having an involvement in their local politics, to the state politics, to the congressional, to the federal, that we are going to lose our country. Everybody makes noise about this presidential election, but the reality is that if the Congress isn't won, if Senate isn't won, that we are at a place right now where we are losing the small vestiges of the freedoms that we once held dear, and that people need to get involved. That we no longer are at a place where we can sit on our couches and watch television. Regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, we are losing our constitutional republic. And even to the educational push for a democracy, which is a farce, we're not a democracy, that we have to get involved. I think that's the most important message that needs to get out to every listener, to every part of this fight. Is that our voices do matter, but it only matters if we stand up and speak out.
Amen to that. Amen. I will give you a call as soon as we post the show, and tonight, I think tonight would be good. There's some questions. You asked me, and I want to answer for you, and especially for locally. But everyone else that listens, I know it wasn't a scheduled podcast. Usually everybody just, Ethan, you know, Tuesday night is my staple night show. That's when I get everybody really that usually calls in and listens in on, you know, or if I advertise the show. I used to be on a lot more, but I usually do it once a week now and maybe a couple times in between when there's news or things I got to talk about. Yeah, I'll call you after the podcast. And Chewbacca, thanks for calling in. Gunslinger, as always, and then everybody else that was on the phone line. I know a couple people I didn't get to. I apologize, but I try to keep it the countdown low. Hey, God bless our republic, and take care, everybody. They're going to cut me off here. All right, take care. God bless.